welcome to this week's Generative Art Podcast with your hosts, Ruth and Tim. This week, we're going to be talking about algorithms. Tim's going to give us an overview of all the amazing algorithms.
Yeah, it's a tall bill, I guess, talking about all the algorithms. That's definitely an oversell. But, yeah, this whole week we've been thinking about doing this episode for a while, and the idea of explaining algorithms in generative art is, I don't know, it's just like a very broad kind of, I don't know if I want to say complex, but just generally a wide range topic as a whole.
So there's a lot to cover, basically. We can't sort of go into absolutely every single algorithm in depth because we would be here for far too long. So really, this is just going to be another episode where we just talk broadly about the different things. And we're still in this very beginner episode-y kind of thing. And later on down the track, we can cherry pick specific algorithms that we do want to talk about in more depth.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, we kind of joke about this anyway. The term algorithm, the term itself, it just ranges from everything. And it's like an algorithm is essentially just a set of instructions. And then, of course, the bigger joke is that an algorithm is what somebody says when they don't actually want to explain what it is that they've done. You know, it's the algorithm's fault that.
Yeah, I just made an algorithm. I just did that. I actually looked at this because we had a little chat about this yesterday, and I struggle with the term algorithm purely, I think, based on what you just said, just because people say it all the time, especially in development. Look at my algorithm I wrote. I wrote this amazing, cool algorithm. Algorithm, and it feels like almost that they're saying it to sound clever. It's really the program itself, because it, like I said, it's a set of instructions. I actually had to Google the difference between the terms equation and algorithm yesterday, because I felt as though people were using the term algorithm instead of equation. Like, you've written an equation, not an algorithm. Which is a completely different thing. Again, it's not necessarily a set of instructions. An equation is something like, you know, y equals x squared. And then you, if x is 2, then y is 4, because 2 squared is 4. So when you're writing a program in development, you do var y equals x squared. That's an equation that you're writing, not an algorithm. So I made something this week which had used an equation. It was, you know, point X equals sine this over this, cos this over this, etc. That was an equation that I wrote. And I think a lot of people would have described it as an algorithm. And so I really struggle with the term. I'm really hoping after this episode I feel a lot better. I feel a lot more comfortable.
Oh, I've got a surprise for you.
Yeah.
Probably won't.
Oh, what?
The funny thing of the kind of equation algorithm, I guess, clash there is you would use, if you were solving that problem on paper, a series of steps, which in a way would be your algorithm to solve that.
Yeah.
You know, if you're balancing out the left and the right side of an equation, you know, these are the steps that you take, and that itself is, I guess, your personal algorithm. But when we get into generative art, I guess it's just easier to kind of explore, I don't know, a few of the more common patterns that are used and a few of the more common kind of algorithms. I was kind of looking into this a little bit more, and it does kind of make sense. It's like with generative art, we have the autonomous system, like something that kind of throws in the element of random that we've talked about so many times,
yeah,
or the element of, you know, something out of your control. But there is kind of like a whole category that is just like flat called algorithmic art, where you have your algorithm and you plug in something and it applies it to that artwork, or you just make something like a fractal that will always be the same every single time. And that, interestingly, falls into its own kind of category of algorithmic art, which I think for our case, we just kind of group everything together anyway. There's not really much need to get snooty about the different terms.
Uh-huh. I'm okay with that.
So one kind of piece, I guess, of algorithmic art that I find super interesting, and I guess like a good way to start to describe algorithms, is Conway's Game of Life, like the cellular automata. Have you looked at those?
Yeah. That's come up a couple of times. I have never coded them.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah. So I guess like for me to explain what that is, I can kind of explain, I guess, the rules of how it works and kind of do my best to paint a picture, as difficult as that may be. Conway's Game of Life essentially has a grid, if you imagine a grid, and on that grid, each square can either be on or off. So it's either, you know, a blank white, or you put a color in there, black. And then it kind of runs through iterations. And so at the start, you'll kind of put into it, you just kind of usually, especially on a laptop, like move your mouse around and it will just enter a bunch of spaces. And the algorithm for this is every iteration that it runs, it goes over that grid, and depending on if a square is on or off, it'll take a specific action. So if, and I kind of think this is a good way to start looking at algorithms, because especially with generative art, it's the same kind of thing. Like we take an action, then we take another action based on the previous action, then we take another action based on the previous action. And that kind of evolution tends to be, I guess, in a lot of ways, the kind of primary algorithm that we're using. So in Conway's Game of Life, if a square has no siblings next to it at all, then it just dies. So in the next iteration, it goes from black to white. If there are, I can't remember it exactly, if there are three neighbors next to it, it dies from essentially, I guess the term is overpopulation. It's like it's got too much stuff near it, so it's going to die. But if there are two by themselves and no neighbor, I think I'm right on this, then they create a third one next to it. So they kind of like breed or kind of multiply. And so the big thing with Conway's Game of Life is you can kind of put in some patterns, and through each iteration, you know, other patterns start to emerge. So there's like some things that do little loops called like blinkers, and there's some things that kind of appear to be rotating. And then, you know, if you get the format exactly right, there are some things that appear to kind of shoot off into the distance. And, you know, the grid on this is essentially infinite. They can just kind of keep going and keep going and keep going.
Uh-huh.
But that, I don't know, for some reason to me, I think that feels like the easiest way to explain an algorithm.
I think
a series of, yeah.
No, go on.
Oh, a series of instructions that you're going to keep iterating on to ultimately kind of give you some kind of output.
I think that's a really, really good example to start with. I think that's good because an algorithm can, in the base sense, like when we're not talking about generative art, just be a set of instructions. And you just go over once and that's your program, that's done. I think the key, which you just mentioned, was an action based on a previous action, which I think is really, really key to generative art. It's something I've never really considered. Is we talk about randomness a lot, and actually a lot of the noise stuff, which I think you're going to get into at some point, it's actually based on what's happened before and what's going to happen next, a lot of it. And
right.
So I think that, to me, is really a really kind of what separates the kind of art bit from a lot of other just, it's just a program. Like, we're actually thinking about state and how things are developing and what's coming next. And this is just such a good example of that.
Yeah, so often as well with generative art, it's like getting a bunch of different techniques and then combining them together for a specific output. So with Conway's Game of Life, and I'll put a link in for this, there's versions where they've connected like a MIDI controller to it.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, as they're translating, they each make like a specific noise, and you kind of start to also kind of hear, you know, they can turn like a visual piece of algorithmic art into like a audio piece of algorithmic art, which is pretty cool.
I'm assuming that's the launch pad. It's like a 8x8 square of just square buttons. So it lends.
That's it.
Yeah, it lends itself to the square grid really well. Yeah. And you can LED control it, so you can light them up when they're alive and turn them off when they die.
Yeah. Well, it's like that idea of applying, I guess, like a second algorithm that says, hey, when these things are lit, make this noise. When these things are lit, make this noise. You know, if these things are doing this, make this noise. Like, that's just a second. All it really is a second layer kind of going over the first one.
Yeah.
Very Jake, cool. Who we had on a previous episode, has done a kind of version of that where he was essentially transmitting images over audio. So you'd be kind of like, this color sounds like this. And you know, he had his kind of layer that, yeah, branched on top of that, which I thought was cool.
Yeah.
I guess fractals are the other kind of big, crazy piece of algorithmic art before we kind of start to dig more into generative.
Yeah, so explain this to me, because to me, again, we're going back to what I said at the beginning, a fractal is just an equation that's getting solved. Have I misunderstood?
Yeah. No, that's it. It's like, it's essentially like lying patterns on top of each other and on top of each other and on top of each other. Forever. because, you know, you see some of those fractal kind of visualizations and they're just kind of insane. But it is just a specific set of instructions. But then there's, you know, there's the famous fractals that people kind of go nuts for, like where, you know, you get those.
Like the Mandelbrot. I think.
Yeah, the Mandel. Yeah, that's probably the most famous.
That was
probably
the first one, wasn't it? I think it was Mr. Mandelbrot that came up with the fractal algorithm. And made them to start with.
And that's it. And the piece that kind of makes that algorithmic art rather than generative is, you know, with the Mandelbrot, Mandelbrot.
Brot, I believe. I might be wrong.
I want to say butt because, yeah. People are, you know, you kind of keep going deeper into that and you follow different colors, but you can essentially share where you are in that coordinate system. So you can be like, whoa, go to this place in this fractal and see this cool thing, which is cool in itself.
Did you see the 4D one? It was a couple of weeks ago someone showed it to me.
Whenever somebody says 4D, I start to kind of...
4D?
My brain 3D, breaks.
3D one. I think they described it as
4D. 3D, I'm with you.
Yeah, I think they described it as 4D because... maths, I don't know. Time.
Is the dimension.
Yeah, so it was made in a piece of 3D software, right? And because it changes over time, that's where your fourth dimension comes from. It had been made in a piece of 3D software called Houdini, which means something different to me in my life.
CSS.
Yeah, I know. They're both called the same thing. They had coded it within the software, which made me have a quick look at the software. I think it's just, it's a, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh God, words. I'm so glad you're doing the talking today, Tim. like a professional FX style software for films and special effects and things like that. And it's, I don't know why it was special. I think nobody had done it in a 3D piece of 3D software before over time. And I will get a link to it.
It's rendered out, as opposed to
I think that was probably what it was, because it took so much processing power to render it out. We'd only ever had stills before or something like that.
Right.
Because it's got to do all the maths. And it's like this little animation of a basically like a little exploding thing. It looks very cool. It does look very cool.
I think I have seen some things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then kind of getting into, I guess, algorithms for generative art. I guess, like, in a good sense, the tutorials that I've put on generativeartistry.com basically get into those. And then I kind of have struggled to, like, again, the same way that leading up to this episode, like, the idea of getting more complex things, like... noise algorithms into a tutorial that is made to be, I guess, as simple as possible. It kind of has a challenge itself.
Yeah.
But before we before we even build our way up to noise, I guess we should just look at, you know, some of the other things that are more fun to play around with in generative art.
Okay.
The first one, I think, and it does feel like it's like an entry point a lot of the time when people want to start making generative art, is trees, like tree algorithms, not just trees in that you have a node and that branches into more nodes and they branch into more nodes, which is, I guess, the literal code definition.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. It's more than that.
Yeah. But yeah, coding like a tree in itself, I guess it is essentially like that. I kind of accidentally explained it before I got to explain it.
I think I know what you mean there, because it's you add parameters to make it more tree-like. Is that what you're going to get
to? No, that's exactly it. Okay. So, yeah, that's that's exactly what I want to get to.
Okay, because you do it.
I'll try. Yeah. You kind of have to imagine it's like you have a base trunk. The cool thing about coding trees is you can kind of do it without having to look up algorithms. Like, I feel like when things get more complex, if I'm making something with noise or I want to do some kind of splines or something like that, there's algorithms. I hate that we have to keep saying algorithms.
Should we nickname it?
Yeah, there's a series of instructions. Yeah, there's a series of instructions that's defined, essentially. Like the same way that you would use an equation to get the distance between two spaces. There's, you know, a series of ways that are like, these is the best way to go from interpolate from A to B in a smooth manner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are kind of solved problems. But when you, if you want to kind of go out to build a tree, you get to use a bit of your own imagination to say, okay, how am I going to do this? I actually think by the time we release this episode, I'll have a demo on generative artistry as well for trees. So you can kind of go through it at home if you like. But yeah, you essentially have a start branch. It's essentially like if you were going to draw a tree by hand, how would you do it? And you would start from the trunk, unless you're absolutely insane.
This is basically the way that my dad taught me how to draw trees. And I was like, I must have been about five. And I've always been able to draw trees. And you basically do exactly that. You'd start from the trunk and you get up a certain, you know, you have one thing and then you split it in two. And then you split those two things in two. And you carry on doing this. Every single branch you then have, you just keep splitting in two. And if you follow that rule, you can draw a tree. That was dad's rule. And
that's exactly,
I'm assuming the algorithm is the same. I'm assuming he probably took that drawing rule from an algorithm, knowing my dad. I'm assuming that's what you're going to say.
No, well, that's it. It's it, it kind of has the underlying recursion in it, because you're running the same thing that says, hey, I've got one branch, I'm going to split this branch into two branches. That in itself is the entirety of the algorithm, and then you're just running it over itself over and over and over again. And then you can start to apply kind of the random qualities into it, and those in itself can be anything you like. So, you know, you've got your base trunk, and then it's like, okay, I'm going to split this into two, but which angles are these two going to go into? You know, one of them will go this way, one of them will go the next way, and then you've got two more, and you can say, okay, which angle do I want these two to go into?
Length?
How long do I want them to be?
Or how wide do I want them to be? Oh my goodness me. So what you just said very quickly in passing is that you're making a tutorial for this to go on the website. Can you see how excited I am right now? My voice is just good.
It's cool.
I'm pretty excited. I'm gonna make trees. Yeah.
It's one of those interesting things to me, because every time I do it, I don't know, it's difficult to be super happy with the result. And I guess a big aspect of that is you see trees in day-to-day life and they're so complex and beautiful.
And different.
And you know, there's
leaves,
I feel like in nature, there's so many funny rules and kind of unknowns of how a tree actually grows in real life. You know, it's like, oh, it's trying to branch out to get sun, to get, you know, as opposed to just being like a code tree, which is like, A, I've already moved into 2D space, so it's going to be less brilliant. And then B, it's like, oh, I want it to branch out like a tree, but, you know, the first thing that will happen is the lines will like cross each other, the branch as well. And I'll be like, oh, do I really like that? Do I not like that? You can just kind of start to get lost in the infinite rules that you're making in the algorithm of when to split the branches. It's like, well, I want them to be between this long and this long, but always less thick than the base branch and always less long than the base branch. I don't want a random long. And like the aesthetics, you're kind of torn between wanting the chaotic random and wanting
perfection.
Which is
usually chaotic random anyway. You just curate
exactly,
it to the point in which you just go, oh yes, I'm visually okay with this. I am genuinely quite like, what do I have to do after we start recording? Do I have to do anything? Can I just code a tree now? I haven't.
Oh, you should give it a go. I feel like it's a fun exercise, and you can kind of take coding a tree into a few different spaces as well, because it enters the fractal space very, very easily. If you want to go and take out the random aspect of it and say every branch has like an angle 33 degrees or something like that, then the tree will kind of curve into itself into a fractal pattern, essentially, and it will get smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah, I think I've seen this.
I recommend that as well. You know, if you make one where you can animate the angle changing and just redraw it over and over again, and you can kind of have this funny hand-like fractal, which is fun in itself as well.
Interesting.
I guess the next one that I kind of like to explain, and I don't know, I guess like a big part of this episode is just kind of the idea of getting people trying to think and solve these things without having to look it up. Like, there's a lot of kind of prior art in generative art itself, and it is kind of easy to get sucked into, you know, going onto something like CodePen or Glitch and seeing something and then playing around with it. But you also have a lot to gain of trying to figure it out yourself, mostly because you then learn, you know, you can make a small mistake, but that can result into something that looks completely different, and then you can kind of go down that path itself.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with this. Actually, figuring it's even if you don't remember, what I tend to do is I'll do one of these. Like, I'll probably go away and do the tree. and figure it out. And then a week later, I'll forget how I did it. But the way, that way of thinking will never leave. And that idea of changing something and keeping it going, and changing it a little bit more and keeping it going and keeping previous state, and building something visual out of doing that, like this kind of recursion or random, like curated random, like that those ideas are very important, because I think they've influenced so many other things, even if I haven't necessarily used strictly an algorithm to create something.
Yeah. Well, it's like the idea of, you know, with the tree, I guess the way that we described it is branches. But if you look at it more as nodes, like the end of each branch, the start and the end is a node, you can kind of start to think a little bit more in terms of nodes and meshes. I guess a good one to describe would be, and there's already, I did a tutorial on this one, on circle packing.
I love that one.
You know, it's a beautiful visual effect to have, you know, a small space. It's almost like a ball pit, you know, how many circles can we fit into this area? But the set of instructions that I've used to build that are, and it's a little bit wasteful in that I'll just iterate for 10,000 times and I'll just stop after that. And that is the limiting factor, as opposed to some kind of perfect algorithm that will predict where the ball should go.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
But I would essentially say you have a screen size or square, whatever your canvas would be, and you could pick a random point, and that's going to be your first circle. And with that circle, you essentially expand it and make it bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until you hit, you know, and this is one of the boundaries, immediately you hit an edge of the screen. And so that will make that ball relatively random sized, because if you start right in the corner, it's going to immediately hit a wall. If you start right in the center, it's immediately, eventually going to hit, you know, one of the sides.
Yeah.
And then the iteration part of that is picking another random spot and doing exactly the same thing. But this time you've already got one node, which is the first circle, sitting in your canvas. So with the second one, you keep expanding it, and then you have to check against all the other ones. And if it hits a wall or if it hits one of the other, then you stop. And you have two circles then that are touching each other. You know, it's not packed in per se, they're just there, and there's no real physics or anything being applied. It just expanded until you hit the second circle. And then you do a third and you do a fourth. And you also have to take care, like if your random point is within one of the other circles, you just don't draw it at all, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect
sense. I try my
sense.
Best.
I've actually done that tutorial, and it does remind me, because you just made the point, I'm slightly deviating from algorithms, that it's slightly wasteful, because you have to iterate over all the ones that have been before. So you draw one circle.
Yeah.
Once you draw the next one, you have to make sure that it's either not in the previous circle, or if you are going to touch the edge of that circle, because you're trying to pack in circles into your bounds, right?
That's it. The thing that kind of feels...
I feel like this is always wasteful when I'm programming. Just my thought on this. You have to do the same thing when you're doing physics collision detection, is you have like 10 particles on the screen. Let's say they're little tiny balls, so they're not packed in, but they're moving around, and you have to like every single one of them has to keep checking every single other one of those to make sure it's not going to be hitting it.
Right.
And I feel like is there a better way of doing this? Someone get in touch with me on Twitter and tell me if there's a better way of doing this, because I feel it's very processing heavy. I think it's fine when you're doing...
No, that's exactly...
When you're sort of generating a flat piece of art, it doesn't really, to me, it doesn't matter too much if it's... I did one this week where I'd written that equation that I spoke about at the beginning of the episode, and it on mobile, it takes about 20 seconds to load. And I'm like, but it's all right, because it's not moving. I only want to generate it once. I might want to print it out, right? But for something like things that are animating all the time, you really got to watch that. Okay, that's my thought.
Yeah, well, that's what feels. It feels so counterintuitive because you're the element of random. Theoretically, you could say, I'm going to run this 10,000 times. I'm going to try and create 10,000 circles. But a circle won't be created if it starts from within another one. So, and I really do hope we haven't lost everybody here. Theoretically, it could happen 10,000 times and you could end up with one circle, you know, and that,
and that's my,
it's very counterintuitive. It's like, we spent so much time, you know, focusing on not wasting processing. But yeah, you win some, you lose some.
My favorite thing is what you just said, which is you can draw this, you can have the same circle 10,000 times or be inside that circle 10,000 times. You've lost the ability to draw another one. That's my favorite thing about probability. It's we are always, you roll a dice six times. You might roll six times. And everybody can see that. Everybody's like, yeah, right. That's fine. You roll it 60 times. And everybody will expect you to roll a one, a six at a time, so 10 times. A two, a six at a time, 10 times. If you say to somebody, you can roll a six 60 times, everyone's like, no, you can't. But you can. Like, you actually, it's my favorite thing. I'm like, but you can.
There's
very, very
some kind of magician.
But you can.
There's some magician stuff where they're like, they usually kind of preach psychic powers or something, and they say, look, I'll do this thing 10 times. I'll flip the coin and I'll get it on tails 10 times. And they can do it like, I'll flip this coin and get it on tails 100 times. And it always is eventually revealed that they sat there and they did that, recording the act, like 8,000 times.
Really?
To get that, to get their tape of them getting it exactly right.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Goodness. And it's like, you know, if you throw away those other things, it suddenly looks like absolute magic.
Yeah. I'm into this. I have other reasons why I'm into this, which I'm not going to get into now. My favorite thing about probability. It's my favorite thing about random. It's my favorite thing about making this art sometimes. I've been doing a lot of it this month, and you really, really notice. Like, I'll do something very simple, which is I'll have, say, a color palette of 8 colors, and I'll chuck 100 shapes on the canvas, and they can pick any of those 8 colors, like, supposedly equally, and you just won't see one of those colors come up, and you start to question your case. Right. I've got 100 shapes, surely 8 colors are gonna come up randomly, and 100 No, there's nothing on your code. It just has not picked that one color on that specific render of that. Yeah.
Yep. I guess so. Yeah, that's like the kind of example of circle packing. Another one, if which is a really fun exercise. If you're just if you're just playing around, kind of wanting to, I guess, make your own algorithms and whatnot. Another one that is fun to try to do and notoriously difficult really to match nature is like a shatter effect. If you've like broken a window or something like that, you kind of use, I don't know, you can kind of look at it and go like, oh, I think I can see how this has worked. But then they are difficult to kind of achieve. And it is a similar, like a node-esque thing. You know, you start at a point and you start to branch outward with lines, but you don't want those lines to cross each other. They kind of hit into themselves. It's a difficult one. But I guess the final algorithm that I just would like to chat about, which is so difficult to explain, is noise algorithms, particularly Perlin noise or simplex noise, which
I feel like
are used in generative art there's always.
There's probably a whole episode to do just on noise, because I've been getting loads more interested in it over the past couple of months. And that is both from an audio perspective and a generative art perspective. Go on.
I mean, we'll just kind of do like a brief overview. It would be cool to do it.
Might go into a rabbit hole. Stop me.
We'll try. The thing about Noise. I've actually asked a bunch of kind of established people who teach generative art, and I've been wanting to write a tutorial on noise for maybe a year now, in a way that is generally understandable, and in a way that, like, if you look at the tutorials on generative artistry, they sometimes get messy, like the circle packing one, because I want to show the process of building something where you have to iterate through it. And with a noise, it's so difficult to say, here's step A. You can see the start and you can see the end when it's described. And when I go to build it, it's like, I will go to the Wikipedia for a Perlin noise, which we should just say is really, really cool. It was like developed in the 80s, I want to say. Perlin
came up with it in the 80s, didn't he? It won an Oscar.
Yeah, it was for
an Academy Award. Sorry.
Can an algorithm win an Oscar?
He did for the algorithm, right?
I don't know.
Because of its use. So he had developed it for... Sorry, you can go on. I'm not aware what I'm going to talk about.
Yeah, yeah. He was essentially frustrated that computer graphics didn't really look natural. They kind of tended to be like blocky or machine-like, which is fair because they're machines. But he essentially developed this algorithm, which is, how do you even describe noise? This is the part that I was most kind of fearful of this podcast.
Are we just describing Perlin noise? Or are we just describing noise? Because they're quite...
Let's go with Perlin noise or noise and then Perlin noise.
Noise essentially is just randomness. So if we think about something like, something like white noise. Yeah. So we say white noise to somebody who hasn't really thought about it. You think about that static on an old TV set, which hasn't tuned in yet.
The scary static on an old TV set.
If you watch scary films in the 90s, I guess. And that is basically, if you want to recreate that with audio, you fill audio with random numbers. So audio is essentially numbers when you listen to it, especially digital.
Just random wavelengths.
Yeah, so you can, a way to do it in JavaScript is very simply just to spit out to your speakers math.random, and you'll just get that white noise hiss. We call it white noise. There's different kinds of noises where you just filter out different frequencies of that. There's things like brown noise and pink noise and all this other kind of noise that you can have. But essentially, it's just randomness. It's actually just randomness. So if we take something like Gaussian noise or Perlin noise, the deviations on this idea of random, where they're slightly less random because they're filtered in different ways. Right?
Right, right. Perlin noise.
Perlin's extremely clever because Perlin looks at the previous noise that you've had and is random based on the previous value. I feel like Ken is quite right. So you could...
Yeah, it interpolates, it changes between things based on its previous. So there's never really a jarring, although it can happen in Perlin noise, but there's very unoften a jarring, we're going left. The best way that I describe the noise is like an air, like a wind in a large space. It's like the wind is never really strong, and then you take one step forward and the wind is gone. You know, the wind will be strong and then it will kind of fade out as time goes on or space goes on.
If you look at clouds, they don't. You don't get a very strong, like, they sort of fade in and fade out, right? They fade towards
that's a good way.
A white fluffy cloud, and then they fade out of it into the blue sky.
That's it.
Or and that's
thicker in some places and thinner in other places, but it's never thick and then a straight line. And that was no one ever sees a cubic cloud, although that would be cool.
A cube in the sky. It's just cloud. Do you want to know them vague? Like an overview of the maths behind it. Should we leave that for another episode? Because I literally.
We can leave it for another. I mean, it's similar. It's similar to the nodes idea. You would have a grid of nodes, There's kind of like I think it's like 3 or 4 steps to kind of get down to what it is, but you have a grid of nodes and each of those nodes has a random vector. So it has something kind of pointing into a random direction in 360 degrees from that single point. So that's kind of the first part of it is having those directions. And then from within those grids, you essentially generate, you generate a gradient from within. So you have a square and each corner of that square has has a vector pointing in a certain direction. And so then each part of that square will have a gradient pointing in generally that direction. But, you know, kind of depending on what other directions are around it. And then with those gradients, you kind of interpolate, you kind of dull them down to be stronger or lighter depending on which ones are around them, which you use almost like a smoothing.
That was a really, really good way of
a smooth
visualizing it. Yeah, a good old LERP. Without me going into the maths, which is essentially what I was going to get into, purely because I had this discussion with my sister last week after dinner. Everybody left the table, but I was describing different ways of generating noise and from numbers perspective and different filters and different curves, like whether different LERPing is going from one value to another value, not necessarily in a straight way, so going from like 0 to 1, but instead of going 0.1, 0.2, 0.3, you might go very quickly to 0.4 and then slowly to 0.5 and then quickly to 0.1, right?
Yeah,
that's probably a better way to describe it. And we were talking about noise, and she just said, yeah, but maybe we could take the normal distribution of this and then the standard deviation of that, and then we could do that. And I literally looked at her and went, do you know what Perlin noise is? And she went, no. And I went, you just made it up. she's a mathematician, by the way, these listeners. Like, she hadn't just made a random guess. I was just drawing different curves for her, and she was like, well, you could do this, and then you get some really nice like effects. And I went, you could have won the Canary Award. So I was going to describe that, but I feel like that's probably a mathematical episode that we'll do later. Do some numbers.
Yeah, it's so difficult, and I don't. Yeah, I don't think I've done a particularly great job of describing it. It's something that you can see if you look at how it's worked. Like if you go to the Wikipedia for Perlin noise, you can see how they're doing it. But it's difficult to describe visually in words. We did our best, but it's also difficult to describe in a sequential way of coding it. It's kind of difficult to do because, especially with generative art things, I kind of want to see what I'm doing. So if you make a grid with vectors on it, I'll be like, oh, okay, I need to show those vectors. So maybe I'll put an arrow going in lots of different directions from that grid. But then doing the later interpolations mean like I'm essentially coloring in the grid, which is difficult. And then that in itself is difficult to code visually. Like it works. You can see that the noise is working, but to visually show how it looks that tends to be difficult. But you know, we'll leave it there. We'll put some links.
That was amazing. Thank you so much. I feel like that was a really good overview of algorithms, Tim. I'm enthused.
Yeah, I mean, I guess like the real goal. The real goal is to kind of recommend, hey, try and. I guess make your own algorithm for, you know, a glass shattering or make a tree.
Shattering this week, actually. It was quite easy for me to do a sort of, oh God, how do you like describe this on a podcast when they're quite common. It's not necessarily a shattering, but you have a point going to other points around it, and you get a sort of kind of shatter glass effect. But it's just one point going to the closest points, and another point going to the closest points, another point going to the closest points. So they just join up to the closest point. I can say this because I didn't make these, but if you do want to have a go at some algorithms and you're not quite sure where to start, Tim has done an amazing series of tutorials on generative artistry where this podcast is. I did them myself last year. I made them all audio reactive. That was just a little project that I wanted to do.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's like apply another layer on top of that layer, or change the algorithm or the rules of what's working, and you'll have something even more complex.
It was definitely worth doing. They don't take, if you, as long as you're not putting audio visualization in there, which for some of them was particularly difficult, I remember, just because of the way they've been written and the way that the audio data comes in. If you're not doing that, they don't take a huge amount of time. They're very straightforward and they teach you a lot. do that. Yeah. There you go. Thank you, Tim.
All right. Thank you. Great.
Good job.
Good job. Okay. Perfect.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Generative Art Podcast. Don't forget you can find us on Twitter at Gen Art Podcast. Please give us a follow and don't forget to tell your friends.